This is a BloomerBoomer.com podcast with host Andy Asher.
Well, hi, everyone. Well, since we do a lot here at Bloomer Boomer on travel, travel ideas for baby boomers and travel destinations, travel tips, and so on, we recently started collaborating with BoomerTravelPatrol.com. Now, it's a great website that, as the name implies, it shares travel advice for baby boomers. Now, I have a new podcast where we chat with their experts and share it with you. So today, well, of all things, we have kind of a different way of approaching it, so to speak. We're actually going to be talking to the alter ego of an Australian Shepherd dog named Susie, who travels together with a guy named Don Anderson, her more talkative sidekick. Well, hey, Don, you know, thanks for joining us, first of all. You know what? I think you can explain this a lot better than me. So why don't you just pick it up from there?
You know, as we were doing the Bloomer Travel Patrol, we just got thinking about, well, somebody else suggested as well, why don't you have a pet patrol and talk about, you know, pet-related travel. And, you know, Liz, my partner, and I said, well, that's a great idea. And so we did that. And it's just been really exciting and fun because we can be advocates for, you know, for pets. And there's so many boomers have pets because most of us are empty nesters. Those of us who have kids, you know, the kids have grown and gone away and so on. And so, you know, we have what they call furry kids.
That's exactly what it is. Don, you described my situation. My kids are out of the house and they're on their own, and I just adopted a new furry friend. So a lot of other people are like that as well. Now, this avocation or vocation of yours now must take you on some interesting excursions, everything from RV trips to even possibly five-star hotels and cruises.
Oh, yes. I mean, it's amazing. I mean, I've found that stuff. I've had one other person that interviewed me, and I, you know, basically they asked me, well, what about pets with cruises? And so I actually, you know, investigated that even. That's very limited at this point, but that's starting to change as well. But I mean, you find, you know, pets going everywhere. And so part of what we've done with the site is to say where we think it's, you know, and where Susie and I, because I'm her voice, but, you know, she likes to travel. And so last year, we made one huge trip. We were invited to go to a big dog camp, Camp Dawn to the Dogs up in Vermont. And as a result, you know, of course, we planned. And so we planned to stay and found pet-friendly properties going all the way up to the camp. And then that's in through, you know, Ohio and New York. And then we, you know, at the camp, we were there for the week. And then we came back and went through Canada. And so we stayed at different pet-friendly properties. And we found some pet-friendly places to eat. Some of them were a surprise, you know, because I look for little local places and kind of unique places when I can find them. I'd rather eat there than eat at some, you know, chain. And so we were able to see in different places where they were, you know, more pet friendly than others. And you know, so, and we discovered too that it's not that difficult to take a pet across the border into Canada as long as you have what I call the pet passport, which is essentially their vaccination records. And I mean, it was really a non-event when we came to the border, you know, and crossed. And then we found, you know, one of the most pet-friendly places in North America at Niagara Falls, and, you know, that really kind of caters to people like us that have pets. And they were extremely, it was extremely interesting to go there because, you know, they put the dog's name on the board and a big blackboard, and they have milk bones and biscuits, things like that. They're waiting for you, and then they have a little package of with a toy in it, some poopy bags. It, you know, it's just amazing what you find out as you travel. And then the other thing we looked into, of course, too, and this is on the Boomer Travel Control side and the Pet Patrol, are different, you know, we have different tips of how to prepare for travel and things that you need to have and be aware of. Whether or not you should take your pet with you if you go international. And really, you know, I'm kind of leery of taking either one of them on an airplane because of some of the things I've heard about. But, you know, but there are ways to do it that are better. So we go into all that different information. And, of course, if someone comes up and asks a question, we'll look into it and see what we find out.
Well, let's drill down into that a little bit. How many miles in total did you travel on that trip?
On that trip, we traveled like 3,500 miles.
So it sounds to me that you need to do your homework and do some research before you leave.
Yes, yeah, you do. You've got to be prepared. I mean, you got to know what you're getting yourself into. Number one, you know, to me, the most important tip about taking your pet with you is you need to have your pet needs to be trained properly. And especially when you get a younger dog, that's easy to do because they're very, very smart and accepting of training. I mean, Bo is, you know, just amazing how smart he is. If I say the crate word, in fact, I have to be careful now because he's down here, he just goes right into the crate. And, of course, a lot of times when you travel, you've got to take, you know, a crate or something with you because some places require that you have them in a crate when you're there. But the most important thing is training. You know, all dogs should be, basic training where they, come to you when you call them, where they will sit, where they will stay. So if you get into an awkward situation, you have control of the pet. So that's important. The other thing is you have to realize, too, that you got to keep them hydrated when you travel. Make sure that you carry water with you. I mean, I have a kit of a bowl and water. I have a first aid kit that I take with me, and have their different treats and their food. Because you got to basically take whatever food they're on. I advise taking a supply of food. And so these are, some of the basics. Also, you need to know, and you should know this before you take them on a long trip, does your pet like riding in the car? And that's also training involved. Now, some pets may never be suited to traveling and trip. But if you have a pet that likes to go in the car with you, is used to the car, and you don't want to just be taking your pet from home to the vet or to some place they don't particularly care for. You want to be sure you take them with you. Like, for example, with Susie, I mean, I started taking her, and if I go to get, something for a drive-through or something where I need to go pick up something, a lot of times I would take her in the car with me. And so she was very comfortable with traveling, and she doesn't get car sick. So all these things are important to know so your trip is pleasant for both you and your animal. I mean, and for your little, furry kid.
So I'm assuming as part of doing your homework, if you're doing some research online, for example, you'll want to check to make sure that the hotel or motel accepts pets.
That's what you look for, yes. I mean, plan your route, especially places that you're going to spend the night and see, and a lot of times there are listings. And like on our site, we talk about different properties that we've either visited or we've had recommendations and, on visiting. And, you can see because there's different levels of acceptance. Because there are some that are very pet friendly, like this one place I mentioned, that really caters to dogs. In fact, they will literally watch your dog for you while you go out somewhere if you want them to. Susie was not, didn't need anybody to watch her. But also another thing is you can't expect any most of these hotels require that the dog be well behaved, which means if you have a yipper that's going to be barking all the time, you're going to be asked to depart. So there's rules, and some most places require that you have the, of course, have the dog on the leash, and such as that. But yeah, but it's usually pretty clear, and if you look on the Boomer Travel Patrol site, you know, you'll see places that have different paw ratings. Because I usually rate, when I stay somewhere with them, I rate both the, what I call the human rating, the stars, and then we have a paw rating where the where Susie's done the rating, because it's more or less pet friendly. And like one place got less stars because they didn't have a good place to go out and green space was a long way from your room. I mean, you had to walk to the edge of a parking lot at this one property, and it was pet friendly, but it wasn't like the one hotel that we stayed at where we could walk out the door and there's all this green space. And then some of the properties actually have a little dog area. One had a little dog area with nice grass, and had a fire hydrant, and it had a stand with poopy bags in the stand provided. So, all these different things play into the picture. But yeah, but you will, and there are books that you can get on pet travel that will talk about different places as well. So there's lots of ways to find out. But and also a good travel agent, if you're working with someone, will usually be able to identify places that are pet friendly and also handicapped accessible and stuff of that nature.
So are we talking the high-end 5-star hotels? Do those places exist that accept pets?
Well, yes, some of them do exist. I mean, and we've got some of them on the site as well that are some really, I mean, there's some simple places that are nice but very comfortable that are pet-friendly. In fact, there's a couple down in South Florida that I'd like to take a trip down to the Keys, and I've been looking at properties going down there. But yet, on the West Coast, there's a couple properties that have some really, really nice rooms and are really luxurious, and some of these hotels will have a certain number of rooms or an area that they will allow pets in. I mean, it may not be every room. And then other ones, there's one in Vegas that used to be pet-friendly, and then they upgraded the hotel, and now they're not pet-friendly. So you've got to just kind of look and see. But, yeah, there are hotels across the spectrum from, accept the pets. And of course sometimes there's a weight limit for smaller dogs, so it's more difficult. For example, if you've got a Great Dane, it's harder to find some place. But if if you have an average sized dog and Bo and Susie are in the 20 to 35 pound range, usually most places will accept a dog at 25 pounds or less. There's some that'll just take any dog, and it's all across the board. And some will charge you a one-time fee for the stay. Some will charge you per night for a little extra for the pet, and that's just so they for cleanup and so on.
So what I hear you saying is even these fancy places have accepted the pet-friendly environment that we're living in today.
Yeah, but it is. It's definitely a changing environment. I mean, and of course, too, one of the things we advocate for is for reasonable laws because every state's different. I know here in my home state of Kentucky, we have, dogs are allowed at the outdoor areas in most restaurants. And so that's nice because when, you can take your dog with you and have them sit outside. You can't expect the nice, fine dining restaurant to be accepting dogs inside because of, some of the other people that would object to it. Unless, of course, if it's a service dog, you can go anywhere. But that's because the person depends upon that animal. And restaurants, there's more and more that are becoming pet friendly. I went to one, you know, around here the other week that used to not be pet friendly and now is. And of course, I've actually talked to some people at these places and told them, you know, you got to get with the program here, because baby boomers like to have their animals with them. And of course, in Europe, they've been much more oriented that way for a longer period of time. But it's starting to turn around here in the States too.
So what's your sense of any changes, potential changes that could take place in other forms of transportation, such as train travel in particular, and then maybe less so buses and even probably farther down the road, planes? What do you think the transition, if any, would be taking place there?
Well, I think, you know, the more demand there is and the more people press these groups, it's going to move them to be, you know, more friendly toward pets. It just takes time. But there's, you know, as I said, so many boomers have pets that are like their own kids, and they want to be able to take them with them somewhere. And right now, the best way is, you know, travel by car or by RV. I wouldn't maybe not object to taking one of them on a short flight. You know, it's just when you get into long flights and things like that you run into issues, because you really don't want to check your the way the airlines handle luggage. You certainly don't want to check your pet into as luggage. Then it's just. I'd be worried sick the whole time I was traveling in that case. So I want to have them close by, so if they can fly with me. And I mean, I'm looking toward. But if you have to, if you have to pay for another seat to travel with them, that's fine. And if you want to do that, and then the other thing, of course, is if you cannot. If there's an instance where you want to go on a certain trip and you cannot take care of, if the pet can't go, then you also want to know different options for someone to take care of your pet while you're gone. So, and we talk about that as well.
Yeah. Now, as far as you know, the railroads, for the most part, they don't allow them, or they put them in the luggage department. How does that work?
No, the railroads usually don't allow pets. I don't know. That's another area I'd like to look into, because, for example, my lady and I, we'd like to do the cross-Canadian trip, because there's still a really good, you know, railroad there in Canada that's, a lot of fun to go on. And it'd be nice to take either one or both of them with us, on a trip like that. But, the problem you've got there, of course, is that the dog has to have somewhere to go. And they would have to provide some area on the train for the dog to use the rest, take care of itself and do its, duties. And that would be the real problem on a train, because, some of these trains, if they stop and you get off, and, that's different. But if it's going to be, a long ride, they have to have somewhere to be able to, there's not a doggy bathroom on a train. So that's probably the biggest issue there.
So you've gone over the border into Canada. So I guess maybe your next destination out of the U.S. is Mexico.
Well, yeah, that's something I'm thinking about as well, is going, through that, that border through Mexico, at least, taking maybe a dip in there, not necessarily going way far down, but, of course, we can access, South America, Central America by car if we wanted to. I mean, and so there's lots of places that you could potentially go. And, we're going to be exploring, more of these areas, as we go along, both ourselves and some of the people that we would have, because we have people write guest patrol articles for us as well on different areas of travel. I mean, we have, one that's kind of animal related, about a lady in Australia who went on a horseback tour in Thailand, you know, and it's just so there's lots of, possibilities.
Okay, Don, so as we wind up, maybe a few things that you can share with us for those folks who might be contemplating taking their pet along with them on a trip.
Well, like I said, first of all, make sure they're trained. Make sure that they're well-behaved. Make sure that your dog is trained what's called soft mouth, which means that even if they're alarmed, they won't hard bite anybody. They might nip. Be sure that you take the right supplies with, also that you know, where there may be, a veterinary care, where you're going in case something does happen. So all those things are important, and making sure, especially if you're traveling in the summer, that your dog doesn't get overheated, and never, never, never leave your pet in the car on a hot day without, for any great length of time. I mean, if you go to, gas station or something like that, that's fine. And what I will do is if it's a little warm, even with eating, if they can't eat with me, I'll get something that I can take back and, eat with them at a picnic table or in the car,
Great. And let me just ask you this. Have you found that your pet maybe prevents you from going places you'd like to go? And on the flip side, do you feel that bringing your pet with you increases your enjoyment of the trip?
No, I think it increases your enjoyment of the trip. It's just, and yes, sometimes it does restrict what you can do a little bit. I think the benefits far outweigh the detriments, because we took Susie with us on a trip that was someone in the family had passed, and we took her with us, and so she was able to stay at the pet friendly hotel and while we were gone. But it was comforting because we didn't have to worry about her. She was with us, and it was nice to be able to come back, when we were out for a little while, and, there she was, and, my dog's part of the night sleep with me. I'm used to it. I miss it if I'm gone,
Well, great. Well, I really appreciate your time, Don, and good pet traveling, okay?
Well, yes. Thank you very much, Andy. I've enjoyed talking with you today.
That's Don Anderson with BoomerTravelPatrol.com.
Thanks for listening to our BloomerBoomer.com podcast. We provide transcripts for most of our podcasts, and you can also access all of our podcasts on iTunes. Oh, and we encourage you to leave a comment in the podcast reply section.